Today's shiur in Masechta Midas Daf Lamed Vav. We will begin in Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph on the top of the Amud at the new Mishnah. The Mishnah, as we began yesterday, continues to describe the Mizbeach. It says the Mizbeach Mishnah Mekarim Meravas Karaimus on the southwest corner of the Mizbeach Chayishnei Nekavim. There were two holes, Kimin Shnei Chayt Mendakin, that look like two narrow nostrils. Shadomim hanitonim ayisoid maravi vayisoid rami. There were times there were blood that was poured out on the yisoid on the west side of the mizbeach and on the yisoid on the south side of the mizbeach. Yardim behem, and they would go down those drains umisarvim ba'omah and go out to a canal, to a stream that left the Azara. The Yitzel Nachal Kidron went out to Nachal Kidron that we discussed previously. They would sell that blood mixed with water to farmers who needed it for fertilizer. And it had to be sold because it belonged to Hegdish. And since it belonged to Hegdish, it may not be used without being paid for. There's much discussion in the Mefarshim about these two holes that served as drains. Clearly, there was a hole on the south side and a hole on the west side. The hole on the west side, the halacha is that there are many, that some carbon chattas, pninyos, there are certain carbon chattas that were brought inside the base of Middash, and the shiari hadam, the leftover blood of those carbonos, was brought to the yisoid for being poured out. And the halacha is that it was put on the west side because that was the side that was first encountered when leaving the Beis HaMikdash with that blood. We also know that the halacha is Shiari Hadam, the leftover blood of all Kabbonis, is poured on the yisoid of the Mizbeach, on the foundation of the Mizbeach, and that was poured on the south side because that was where that avoider was done. There is a discussion amongst the Mefarshim if there were two holes on each side or if there was one hole on the west side and one hole on the south side. There are also Mefarshim that want to suggest that the holes were covered because there was a concern that if these holes would not be covered, there would other foreign objects would fall into the hole and perhaps clog those drains. Furthermore, it is the opinion of most Mefarshim that this drains that we discussed in our Mishnah are used strictly for dam. The drain that was used for the yayin, for the nisach hayayin, for the nisachim, were different drains that were on a different place on the Mizbeach. Says the Mishnah, Lamata Beritzva Baisa Karen, on the same southwest corner, Makam Hayasham, Amal Amma, there was a place that took up an Amal Amma, the Tavla Shalshayish, a tunnel that was an Amma by an Amma, the Tavla Shalshayish, it was covered by a marble tile, the Tabas Hoysukavuba, that had a ring in that marble tile, Shabai Yordan Shis, that they would climb down through that tunnel to get access to the Shis, and Menachem started to clean it out. Now the Mefarshim debate, what were they cleaning out? Some Mefarshim explained that they were cleaning out the congealed wine that we just discussed were poured down by the Mizbeach, and every 70 years they would climb down there to clean out the congealed wine. The Arma Farshim will ever disagree and say that that congealed wine was actually between the Mizbeach and the ramp of the Mizbeach. We're about to speak about the ramp in the Mizbeach in a moment. And that ramp of the Mizbeach, that's where they would climb down to clean out that wine. This cleaning wasn't for the wine, but was rather for the blood that we just discussed was poured down that those drainage holes, they would climb down every couple of years to clean out that dam, that it should not clog up that drain. Now the Mishnah goes on to describe the kevesh, the ramp that led up to the Mizbeach. Says the Mishnah, the kevesh ha'yil adremesh the Mizbeach. There was a ramp on the south side of the Mizbeach. Shloshim b'shtayim aroich of shlosh esrei. It had a length of 32 amos by a width of 16 amos. There's a discussion that we know that the ramp was 32 amos long, as our Mishnah just taught us. But the question that comes up is regarding the incline, that we had to add place for the incline. There's essentially two opinions in the Rishonim. There's the opinion of Rashi that the ramp itself, as our Mishnah says, was 32 amos. But when you add the incline, it took up 33.2 amos. And there's the opinion of the Rambam that holds that the actual ramp was really only 30 amos, and when you add the incline, it was 32 amos. Continues the Mishnah, Uruvuva Haisla b'Marava. There was a Revuva on the west side of the ramp. Shisham Naisna P'sulei Chatas Oif. That's where they put the Chatas Oif that got disqualified. There's a Machlokes amongst the Rishonim. What is the definition of a Revuva? Some Rishonim, it seems the opinion of Rashi and the Meiri, that the Revuva was a spat on the side of the west side of the Mizbeach. There are other Rishonim, the Rambam's opinion, that the definition of a Revuva is that the Revuva is a hole, a window, in the actual west side of the Mizbeach. And there's a third opinion amongst the Rishonim that the Revuva was on the ramp itself. On the west side of the ramp, they had this revuva to put the chatas oif that got disqualified. And there's a discussion amongst the Rishonim, why was there specifically a need to be concerned about the chatas oif that got disqualified more than any carbon, more than any other carbon. And the Mefarshim explain. Firstly, they say that the most common kabbonis that were brought were Chatas Oif and Oilas Oif, because every time a child was born, the mother, the Yoledes, had to bring a Chatas Oif and an Oilas Oif. And therefore, as we learned and will learn, every time there was a question if indeed the child was born, they had to bring it Misafik. But an Oilas Oif that we've learned could be brought misafik, but the halacha is that if somebody has a question, if they're obligated to bring an oilas oif, they bring it and they make a tanai. That if they're obligated to bring it, fine, and if they're not obligated to bring it, it should be a carbon nedava. A chatas oif, as we've learned many times, cannot be brought as a nedava. And since a chatas oif cannot be brought as a nedava, since a chatas oif cannot be brought as a nedava, so every time there was a question if they were obligated to bring a chatas oif, they brought it, but they couldn't be makrivit. So what they had to do was start the avoda, but not eat it, and they left it here in this revuva to become posel with lina. This is what's known many times. We've learned the concept of ibur tzura. This is how ibur tzura was done, leaving it overnight, and the next morning it would be burnt. That's one reason they had to have a special place for the Chatas Oif. Furthermore, there is a machlokes, what kind of disqualification is a disqualification that it should be put on the side of the Mizbeach. Some Mefarshim say that if there was Hesach Hadas, then the carbon cannot be brought on the Mizbeach. But even though the carbon cannot be actually brought on the Mizbeach, the halacha is that it isn't definitely possible, and therefore, since it's not definitely possible, we wait until Ibet Sura, until we have overnight to burn it, because the psul of Hesach Hadas is not a definite psul. That's one pshat in the Mefarshim. Another pshat in the Mefarshim is that Hesach Hadas is considered certainly a full-fledged psul, but even though the Hesach Hadas is considered a full-fledged psul, the halacha is that every carbon should not just be burnt because it becomes disqualified. We need to wait overnight that it should have ubitsura and only then burn it. And as we explained, since this was the most common case that there should be a psul, that's why they had a special place for the carbon chatas oif. Furthermore, the Mefarshim explained, besides for the reason that we gave a moment ago, that the oilus oif can be brought with a tanai, which cannot be done by a chatas oif, there's another difference between the oilus oif and the chatas oif. Because the halacha is that an oilus oif, the hakrova of the chatas oif, was not done actually on the mizbeach. The halacha of oilus oif, however, is done on the mizbeach itself. And therefore, even if the oilus oif becomes disqualified, the halacha is that anything that's already on the mizbeach, the halacha is olu lo yeridu, that if they're on the mizbeach, they should not be removed from the mizbeach. And therefore, the oilus oif, they did not have to have a special place for, but the chatas oif that got disqualified, as we just described, had to have a special place. Now the Mishnah goes on to explain about the stones that were used to actually build the Mizbeach. And there are two rules that we have to review in remembering the halacha of the stones that are going to be used for the Mizbeach. One is that the stones, the Torah says, L'son of Alayim Barzo, may not be made with metal. And another halacha is that the stones may not be nicked. They have to be avonim shlemus. The reason why these stones may not be nicked, first of all, the definition of a nick is that if you pass your fingernail over it, you'll notice that it's not smooth. And the reason it may not have a nick, Devin Ezra says, is because if you're going to not have avonim shlemus, what's going to happen is that you're going to have to cut away part of the stone, and if you're cutting away part of the stone will be discarded, and we don't want to have a situation, explains Devin Ezra, that part of the stone that was used for the base, for the Mizbeach, is being discarded, and part is being used for the Mizbeach. Others explain that the Mizbeach, that this is the way they typically built the Mizbeachos for the Avodah Zorah. They did smooth out the stone, so they wanted to show the difference between our Mizbeach and the Mizbeach of the Avodah Zorah. Another pshat is that when one smooths out a stone, so what he's showing is that it's his work that, so to speak, makes the Mizbeach into a Mizbeach, which is not true. We want to show that the Kedusha of the Mizbeach does not emanate from us, but rather the Kedusha of the Mizbeach emanates from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is not our work that contributes to the construction of the Mizbeach. Nafkamina between these Pshatim, there are two Nafkaminas I saw. One question I saw is that this halacha that we're speaking about, the stones, are these halachas only said regarding the stones of the Mizbeach, or are they said regarding the stones that were used in the construction of all of the Beis HaMikdash? And another question is, we know that in the time of the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, they had a worm called the Shamir, which had the ability to cut through stone without cracking it. It wasn't like a chisel or a saw. And the question is, if we're learning that you're not allowed, there has to be avonim shlemus, what would be the halacha if you used this Shamir? Would that disqualify the stone? So says the Mishnah, Achad Avni Kevesh V'Achad Avni Mizbeach, both the stones used to construct the ramp of the Mizbeach and the Mizbeach itself, came from a place called the Bikas Beis Kerem. This is a place near Yerushalayim, where, as the Mefarshim explained, they had particularly smooth stones, and furthermore, the stones there, they typically did not cut out, were metal, they were virgin stones, and therefore there was no concern that those stones were used with metal. They came from Bikas Beis Kerem. The Choyfer L'mata B'psula, they didn't just take from the upper layer of stones, they took from the lower level of stones. Umavim sham avarim shlemus, they would bring from their whole stones, shloihunaf aleim barzel, that did not come into contact with iron, shabazel paisim negia. As we just learned, the slightest touch of iron would disqualify these stones, or pegima, and any nick, the kaldomer, any nick would disqualify the stone. Says the Mishnah further, nifka ma'achas mehen, if one of the stones of the Mizbeach were nicked, he psula v'kulam sheiros. What the Mishnah here is teaching us, explained the Mefarshim, is that let's say one of the stones of the Mizbeach got nicked. We would think that that would disqualify the entire Mizbeach. Teaches us the Mishnah that no, only that stone is disqualified, but the rest of the stones remain fine. Or Malabnoi said Pamayim Bishana, they would cover the Mizbeach with a coat of lime twice a year. Echav Pesach v'Echav Chag, they chose these times specifically because these are the times when the Mizbeach was seen by all of Klal Yisrael. They came to the Beis Hamikdash on Pesach to bring the Korban Pesach, and Sukkos for the Simchas Beis Shreva, Aliyah L'Regel. So they wanted to have the Mizbeach particularly nice, and that's why they covered it. They painted it these two times a year. The Hechel was covered, was refinished, Pam Achas, once a year, the Pesach time. Pesach was the time when they had the most Jews traveling to the Beis Hamikdash. In fact, I saw the Sile Tshuvas Torah Lishma suggests that if one has to paint his home, he should paint it before Pesach. Because our Mishnah says that if you're painting something once a year, the time to do so is Pesach time. Rabbi Omer, Kol Erev Pesach Melabnos V'Mapa, every Shabbos they would wipe down the walls with a wet cloth, Neidomim, because of the blood that accumulated from the sprinkling on the Mizbeach. There's a machloikus Rishonim, how to understand the opinion of Rebbe. Some Rishonim say the Rebbe is arguing with the Tanna Kamma. That the Tanna Kamma says that they used to put on a new coat of lime on the Mizbeach twice a year. Says Rebbe there was no need to put that new coat of lime because every Erev Shabbos they would wash the Mizbeach with a wet cloth. But then I saw a different opinion that suggests that Rebbe and the Tanna Kamma are not arguing. Rebbe says that every Friday they would wipe down the Mizbeach with a wet cloth. And on top of that, says the Tanna Kamma, besides wiping it down every Erev Shabbos with a wet cloth, every Erev before Pesach and Sukkot, they would put on a new coat of lime. Which also, the Mefarshim asks, raises a difficulty. Because as we learned in our previous year, there were very specific dimensions to the Mizbeach. So by adding this coat of lime, aren't you adding to the size of the Mizbeach? So I saw two terutzim. One terut says that there was only one coat of lime, that every time they put on a new coat of lime, they removed first the old, they scraped off the old coat of lime. Another pshat that I saw is that, as we discussed in our previous year, the dimensions on the Mizbeach, the 32 by 32, they really could have taken up even more room. That was, and we in fact learned that the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash Sheni was larger than the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash Rishon. So by making the Mizbeach bigger, by adding these coats of lime, one wasn't violating the size, the prescribed size of the Mizbeach. Says the Mishnah, when they put on this coat of lime, they were very careful not to put on, not to use an iron utensil, shema yigov yirsel, because they have to be very careful that the metal should not touch the Mizbeach. Although the Mefarshim do indicate that when the Kohanim worked with the Mizbeach, with the meat, we learned that they had metal forks to turn over the meat on the Mizbeach, but they explained that Kohanim, Zerizim Heim, and the Kohanim were very careful that those metal forks should only touch the meat and not touch the Mizbeach. Says the Mishnah, why is there such a great concern the iron should not come in contact with the Mizbeach? Shabdar zel nivro l'katzi yomav shel adam. Iron is here to make people's lives shorter. They're used for weapons. The Mizbeach Nivra L'Haruch Yom HaShadam. The Mizbeach brings life to a person. Eina B'din Shionav HaMekatzal HaMa'aruf. And therefore it's inappropriate that the metal, which is a Mekatzer, should be on the Mizbeach, which is the Ma'aruch. And that's why the Beis Yosef explains, the minig is that when one says Birkas HaMazon, we cover all the knives on the table. Because the Birkas HaMazon is the way we're showing that our table is the Mizbeach, and it's inappropriate that the knives should be on our Mizbeach, Shulchanah Shul Adam, Doimel Mizbeach. Another reason the Beis Yosef says one should cover the knives during the recitation of Birkas HaMazon, because during Birkas HaMazon we say the bracha of Vnei Yerushalayim Merkosh B'mher B'Yemenu, and there was once somebody who was benching, and as he said that bracha, he reminded himself of the Churban Habayis, and it brought to him terrible grief until he stabbed himself with the knife that was on the table. And therefore, that's another reason why the knife should be covered. In fact, the Mefarshim say, the nafkamina between these two pshatim is that according to the pshat, the first pshat, on Shabbos and Yontif, knives need not be covered. According to the second pshat, even on Shabbos and Yontif, knives should be covered as well. Furthermore, this is the basis of the halacha, that when one comes into a Beis HaKnesses or Beis HaMedrash, he should not carry a weapon, a gun or a knife, for the same reason, that these are places that bring life to the world, and it's inappropriate that a place that is there to bring life to the world, a weapon should be brought in that shortens the life. There's a tshuva for Rav Moshe, where Rav Moshe discusses if someone is a soldier or someone is a police officer and he's carrying a gun, what should he do? And Rav Moshe says, of course, if it's a situation of sakonas nefashis, where people need to have weaponry on them because of whatever may be the situation, Rav Moshe says that somebody in those circumstances can carry the weapon into shul. If it's possible, Rav Moshe says that the gun should be emptied of its bullets. If you can't avoid bringing the gun to shul, at least don't bring a loaded gun into shul. Of course, probably, if by leaving the gun outside the shul, you're leaving the gun in a place where it could come into the wrong hands, probably the halacha would be, it's better to carry the gun into the shul than to leave it to such an exposed area. Furthermore, there are people who have the minig not to eat with stainless steel or metal silverware. They use silver silverware, or I guess the same would be with plastic silverware, because again, as we said before, the shulchan is the mizbeach, and on the mizbeach, our Mishnah teaches us iron, metal should not come in contact. In fact, I saw that there is a minig that when one sets the table, they put the knives on the left side, the weaker side, again to point out that the knives are mekatzrim, and we want to put it on our weaker side, on the left side. The Machz Avraham in the Tshuva says that whenever we speak about metal, it means strictly metal, iron, stainless steel. Silver is not included in the category of Barzal that our Mishnah discusses. And it's interesting that the Baal Shem, it's said over in the name of the Baal Shem, that one should not use a metal case to cover the mezuzah, because the mezuzah represents Arichas Yomim. In the parasha of the mezuzah, it says, L'man Yirbu Yomeichem, that we should have Arichas Yomim, and it's inappropriate to use a metal case, which as our iron case, which as our Mishnah says, represents the Mekatzah Yom of Shul Adam, and therefore the minig is to either use a plastic, a glass, or a silver case to cover the mezuzah, not one made out of metal or stainless steel. Rav Eliyahu Lapyan uses this concept of Mekatzer Amarech. He says our tongue, our mouth, can be used for two different purposes. Our tongue and mouth can be used to say Divrei Torah and to daven. And our tongues and our mouths could unfortunately be used to say Lashon Hara Rechilus. When one says, Rachmanu Litzlan, Lashon Hara Ruchilas explains Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan, his being Makatzer Yom of Shaladam. They bring Klala to the world. When one says Devei Torah, Devei Tefillah, he's being Maruch Yom of Shaladam. He's bringing length, Arichas Yom to the world. The same tongue, says Rabbi Eliyahu Lapyan, ain't a din. It's inappropriate that something that's used for Maruch should be used for Makatzer, just like we find in the Mizbeach. Similarly, I saw Vart from the Dibur Yisrael, the Majid Zareba. He explains that davening, saying Dibur Torah, brings Arichas Yomim. All Yeshuas come to us by being mispallel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Yetzahara tries to prevent us from davening, or from davening properly. And he tries to convince us to be Makatzer, to shorten our tefillah, not to spend so much time in our tefillah. Says the Mishnah, Ein Oidin, it's inappropriate, Shionif HaMakatzer, that one should be Makatzer as tefillah, when he could be Marech in tefillah, and that Arich in tefillah could bring to us all sorts of Yeshuas v'nechams. Continues the Mishnah in describing the Mizbeach, and the area around the Mizbeach. Says the Mishnah, V'tabaz, Hayu Tzfonish HaMizbeach, there were rings on the north side of the Mizbeach. Shish Sedarim Shul Arba Arba, six rows of four rings. Yeshayim, from a different version, there were Arba Shal Sheish Sheish, four rows of six rings. They had 24 rings, corresponding to the 24 mishmeres that served in the Beis HaMikdash. Every mishmer had a different ring, although we learned in Masech the Tamid, the carbon Tamid was always brought, Tamid Shal Shach, Tamid Shal Ben Abayim, were always brought in a specific ring. The purpose of these rings were that to help keep the animal stationary during the Shechita. As the Mefarshim explained, the way they would normally try to keep the animal still during Shechita was either to hit it with a stick or to make a cut between the eyes, and that would perhaps make the animal into a bamum or a trefa, both types of animals that are disqualified from being used as a carbon. So what they did instead was that they had these rings to help keep the animal stationary. And as a machlok is exactly what they did with these rings. Some explained that they put that the rings were, you could pick up one side of the ring and put the neck of the animal into the ring to keep the animal stationary. Another pshat that I saw is that they tied the feet of the animals to these rings to keep them stationary. These rings were in the north side, because we know that kachin must be slaughtered in the north side of the Mizbeach. So since kachin had to be slaughtered in the north side of the Mizbeach, other Kabbalists did not have a specific place where they needed to be slaughtered. So that's why they made the rings to the north side. Beis HaMitzvachayim, Hoyle Tzfarnish Mizbeach, the place where they slaughtered the animals on the north side. For all of Shmoina Amudim Nanosim, there were eight small pillars. Most Mefarshim learned that they were made out of marble, because otherwise we would have a problem, as we discussed. You can't make a wood structure in the Beis HaMikdash. Revim Shal Erez Al Gabayim, there were square blocks of cedar on top of these pillars. There is no problem of wood, because they weren't attached firmly to the poles. V'unkeli Shal Barzal HaYikvumbam, there were metal hooks on these blocks. Each one of them had three rows of hooks. The reason there were three rows of hooks, because depending on the size of the animal, that's where they hung the animal. The bigger the animal, on a higher hook, they hung it. And here too, there's a machlokes is exactly how the hooks looked. Some say that on each side of these pillars, there were three hooks corresponding to the size of the animal. Others say that on three sides, every side of the pillar of the pole had a different hook at a different height, used for a different type of animal. Shebehen toilem avshitin, that on those hooks they would hang and then skin the animal, and then they would take the animal for further processing al shulchanos shalshayis, on marble tables which were bein amudim, between these pillars. The reason we learned they used marble tables was because if they would have gold or silver tables that conduct heat, they could possibly cause the animal to spoil, decompose. The Mishnah goes on to teach us that in the Beis HaMikdash there was a kiyor, a place where the Kohanim would do Kiddush Yadayim Raglayim, wash the hands and feet before they did the Avodah, as the Shem Shmuel explains. The Mizbeach HaPnimi represents the area where somebody is doing tshuva connects his mind, his machshava to that HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mizbeach HaChitzin is the area where somebody connects his lev to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But one cannot connect not his moyach nor his neshama to HaKadosh Baruch Hu prior to him doing tshuva, prior to him cleansing himself, which is represented by the Kohanim first washing themselves with the kiyor water. Says the Mishnah, HaKiyor Hay Ben Ulam HaMizbeach, the kiyor was situated between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, U'mashur Klapi Adarim, towards the south side. It wasn't directly between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, because they wanted to be able to have a direct view from the Mizbeach into the Beis HaMikdash, not obstructed by the kiyor. Says the Mishnah, Ben Ulam u'Mizbeach Esrim Shtayim Amma, the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach was 22 Amas, U'shtei Esrim Malus Hayusham, there were 12 steps there. Says the Mishnah, Rum Malach Chatzi Amma, the height of a step was a half Amma, the Shulchan and the tread was an Amma. Says the Mishnah, first you had Amma Amma, you had 4 steps with a half Amma height in between each of them, and then there was a landing which was Shalosh 3 Amos long, and again Amma, again you had 4 steps, Verovit Shalosh and a landing of 3 Amos El Yoina, and then again you had 4 steps, each one a half Amma tall, Amma, which gives you a total of 2 Amos, and then you had a Rovit of Arba, a landing of 4 Amos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hal Yoina Amma, that each step was a half an Amma, so you have 4 steps, you have a total of an Amma and Amma of 2 Ammas, but he holds that the upper landing was Chamesh, was 5 Ammas long, and as the Mepharshim explained, since that landing was 5 Ammas long, obviously, and you only have, as we learned at the beginning of the Mishnah, 22 Ammas between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, one of the other landings must have been shorter. Says the Mishnah, Pischa Shel Ulam, the entranceway to the Ulam, Gavai Aboim Amma, was 40 Amos tall, V'rochvai Esrim Amma, 20 Amos wide. V'chomesh Matroyas Shamila Hoya Gabov, there were 5 beams made out of Mila, which is Erez wood, on top of it. The Farshim explained, the purpose of these beams on top of this entranceway were either for decorative purposes or to serve as beams to support the entranceway. There is no concern, explained the Mepharshim, of making a wood structure that we've been discussing, because the problem of a wood structure is only when it's standing. Here the wood was laying flat across the top of the entranceway, that isn't a concern. So again, says the Mishnah, V'chamesh matroa shamila hayal gabov, there were 5 beams made of this wood on top of the entranceway. Hatachtoina adefes ala pesach, the bottom beam extended beyond the doorway, amma mizeh v'amma mizeh, and amma in each direction, so that's 22 amas. Shemala mimena, the beam on top of it, adefes ala amma mizeh v'amma mizeh, was even an amma on each side longer. And Nimtzes Hel Yoina, so we have 5 such beams, the highest beam laying across the top of the opening was Shloshim Amma, was 30 Amma wide. And between the beams, says the Mishnah, the Natbach Shavonim, there were stones, Haybe Kanachavach, between these rows of beams. Says the Mishnah, the Klunzah Shal Eris, Haya Kvuan Mekaisa Shal Hechel, Kaisa Shal Ulam, there were beams of cedar that were in the walls of going from the Hechel to the Ulam. Again, they were not standing, they were laying in the wall to serve as beams for support. And again, there is no problem of eitz because they were laying flat. Kadesh lo yovet. The reason these beams were put in there, so the walls of the ulam should not buckle. As the Mefarshim explained, we're going to learn the Mitzvah Shema tomorrow, Shir, that this ulam was a very large room, but there was no aliyah. There were no attic on the ulam, so there's a concern that those walls should have adequate support, so they had these various beams serving to support the walls of the ulam. The Shashaz Shazov, there were metal chains, gold chains, Hayikvum Betikras Ulam, that were on the ceiling of the Ulam, Shebehen Perche Kahanim, Oilim Viroin as a Taurus, they would climb up and see the crowns that were on top of the windows that were on the windows of the Ulam and the Hechel. Shenemar, Vatarois Tia Lechelim, Lotuvia Liadoya, Lechem Bet Svanya Lizkarm Behechel Hashem. These were the people who donated these Atarois. And they were constantly remembered that they were the ones that donated these ataris. From here, we see, explained the Mefarshim, that when one makes a donation, we may make a plaque to commemorate his donation. Some Mefarshim explained that they, Perche Kahuna, who could climb up these metal, these gold chains, would go there to look at the ataris. Others, the Rosh disagrees. He says just to go into the Beis HaMikdash in order to see the Ataris on top of the windows is Osir. You are only allowed to go in there for the purpose of repairing or seeing if the Beis HaMikdash needs any repair. I saw a very nice word that they went in there for a tikkun for themselves, that if they felt that their level of Ruchnius was going down, they would go into the Beis HaMikdash. And by seeing the beauty of the Beis HaMikdash and the Ruchnius of the Beis HaMikdash, it would bring them back to the proper level. Says the Mishnah further, there was a gold grapevine at the entrance to the Hechel, a mudla gabel klunzois, suspended on poles. Kol mishu misnadev ola, if somebody would donate a golden leaf, or gargar, or golden grape, or eshkoil, or a golden custard of grapes, maybe the Tolaba would come and hang it on that grapevine. Amr of Lazarus Tzadik, Mai Sahaya, Vidimno Shlosh Meis Kahanim, was nice that they needed 300 Kahanim to clear that grapevine. And as we learned from Sefer Talmud, the Gemara says there that it was an exaggeration that they needed so many Kahanim. Why specifically did they make it a gold grapevine? So there are a number of Pshatim that I saw. One Pshat is that in the Beis HaMikdash Rishon, Shlomo HaMelech was able to make a grapevine that indeed produced gold grapes. So to commemorate that, they made a gold grapevine in the Beis HaMikdash Sheni. Another pshat is that Klal Yisrael is compared to a Geffen. Another pshat is that why did they make these supports? So they saw two pshatim. One pshat is that the Geffen represents the Torah. The support represents the support of the Torah. To teach us the concept, Emein Kemech Ein Torah. Torah needs support to be able to continue. Another pshat is that there's a very interesting phenomena regarding grapevine. That even if the grapevine is no longer is dead, it still can be used to support grapes. To teach us that even if our office, even if our forefathers are no longer here, we still rely on the schus office of our forefathers to be able to continue doing what we're supposed to do. Our Mishnah now continues in describing the actual Heichel. Pischa shel Heichel, and the Mefarshim explain why is it called a Heichel. Because the word Heichel comes from the word Kalkola, Parnasa. From the Heichel comes the Parnasa to all of Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help that we who are learning about the Heichel should all be worthy of a Parnasa Toiva V'Rechava. The opening of the Heichel, says the Mishnah, was Gavoya Esrim Amma, was 20 Amos tall, V'Rachvei Eser and 10 amos wide. Says the Mishnah, Arba Dalsus Hayala, it had four doors, Shtayim Befnim and Shtayim Bechutz. Two doors were right by the entranceway to the Heichel, and two doors by the entranceway of the Ulo. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Shtayim Dalsus Laheichel Ulo Kodesh. Hachatzonus, the outer doors opened into the Heichel, Niftachas L'Toich Pesach, L'Chasis Oivish Akosel. The way they opened up was that they opened up against the walls, and when they opened the doors, the doors covered the walls. Vapnimius, the first set of doors, the Toich L'Toich Abayis, L'Chasis Acha Adalsos, they covered the side of the entrance from the Ulam to the Heichel. Says the Mishnah, Shekol Abayis Tuch B'Zov, the entire Beis HaMikdash was covered with a gold coating, the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, Chut Me'ach HaDalsus. Since the area behind the door, this wall was covered by the door, so there was no reason to coat that wall with gold because it wasn't visible anyway, because it was covered by the door. There's an interesting machloikis, Rishonim. We all know there's a concept of hidden mitzvah based on the pasuk of Ze Keli Vandeyu. The question that Rishonim debate is, when one has hidden mitzvah, is it only on something that's visible or even on something that's not visible? Rabbeinu Tam says that hidden mitzvah is only on something that's not visible. And there's a very nice raya to the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. We know that Halach is that when one writes a Sefer Torah, you have to make certain there has to be lines under all of the wording of the Sefer Torah. But by tefillin, there is no rule of certain. Why is there a different rule by a Sefer Torah and by tefillin? So they explain. Because by a Sefer Torah, it's completely exposed. We open up the Sefer Torah to read from it. So since it's completely exposed, it has to have sirtut. The tefillin which are in the backs, which are not exposed, need not have sirtut. However, there are other Rishonim, the Mordechai, Dor Zeruah, their opinion is that hidden mitzvah even applies to something that we don't see. Up to the point that they paskin, that let's say we have the mantle, we have the covering of the Sefer Torah, and let's say it's made out of two materials, one side is silk and the other side is a different material, the side made of silk should be used to cover the part that's in the inside that's on the Sefer Torah, even though it's not visible. So the Mefarshim asks, from our Mishnah, it seems clearly a raya against the opinion of the Mordechai and Dor Zeruah, because our Mishnah says that the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, which were covered by gold, were not visible. Since they weren't visible, they didn't cover them because the doors were covering them. So we see that even though there's an issue of making a hidden mitzvah, of covering all the walls of the Beis HaMikdash with gold, they didn't cover something which wasn't visible. So I saw two answers how to defend the opinion of Mordechai and the Dor Zeruah from our Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef Shaul Natanzon explains that in the Beis HaMikdash Sheni, they weren't that wealthy, and they, even though they ultimately were able to use gold to cover the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, they did so only when necessary. And therefore, that's why, even though there's an inyan of hidden mitzvah, even on places that are not visible, here, because they had to try to save money, that's why they did it differently. Another pshat is that we know that when one has a home, he has to leave an area of zeicha l'churban, an area unpainted zeicha l'churban. So the place that they left in the Beis HaMikdash Sheni, a zeicha l'churban of the Beis HaMikdash Rishon, was behind these doors. So really, the Mordechai is correct. Hidden mitzvahs even in a place that's not visible. But they had to make a zeich l'churban, so they chose to make the zeich l'churban in the Beis HaMikdash Sheni in a plot space that wasn't visible. Which would teach us an interesting halacha, a number of interesting halachas. According to these pshatim, in the Beis HaMikdash Rishon, they did cover even this area with gold, according to both pshatim that we suggested. And furthermore, from here it seems that when one leaves an area in his home, Zeich L'Churban, it doesn't have to be an area that's exposed, that's visible, even an area that's not that visible, as long as it's covered, as long as he left the Zeich L'Churban, it's fine. Rabbi Yehuda has a different opinion about these doors. Rabbi Yehuda and B'toicha Pesach Ha'Ondas, they stood within the entranceway, U'kamin Atzdemarta Ha'ya. They were like Atzdemarta, which means folding doors. V'nechbolois Lachrayim, they folded onto themselves. Eilishtei Amitza Mechza, V'eilishtei Amitza Mechza. Each fold was 2.5 Amis. Chatzi Amma Mezuzah Mikan, leaving a half an Amma of wall space for the doorpost on one side, the chatzi amma mezuzah mikan, shnema mitznayim dalsus l'dalsus shtayim musabes dalsus shtayim l'dalsus echzus shtayim l'dalsus acharis, two folding doors for each door. Continues the Mishnah, v'shnei peshpishim hayu l'shar ha'gadol, the main entrance had two small doors on its side. The reason it's called shar ha'gadol is because since this was the main entrance to the Beis HaMikdash, the place of the greatest kedusha, that's why it's called shar ha'gadol. Another reason why it's called Shar HaGadol is because next to it they had all these great things, the grapevine, the gold grapevine, the gold chains. Another pshat is because it had, as we're going to learn, the main door is called the Shar HaGadol because the side door, it had small doors next to it, the pishpishin, so that's why the main door is called Shar HaGadol. There were two pishpishin, Echad B'Tzof and Echad B'Darim, one to the north and one to the south. Shvedarim l'nichnas by Adam Olam. On the south side, nobody ever entered. V'olav whom first lay day Cheskel Shnemar v'yom alay Hashem Hashar azes sog yia lo yiposech v'ish lo yavabai k'shem alakei Yisrael ba ba va yisogar. Says all the Mefarshim asked, this is a pasuk that refers to the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi. So how are we learning the construction of the Beis HaMikdash Sheni from the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi? So I saw a number of pshatim. One pshat that I saw is that the reason that one may not enter in this door by the Beis HaMikdash Shlishi is because already by the Beis HaMikdash Sheni, that was the entrance through which the Kaviyachol, the Shechina, entered, and therefore to commemorate that, so once the Shechina entered through that door, it can never be used by people. Another pshat is to remind us that there will be a Beis HaMikdash Shlishi. And in that Beis HaMikdash Shlishi, one can, that will be the door through which Kaviyachol the Shechina will enter, and to remind us of that, they did not enter, ever use that door. Now the Mishnah goes on to describe how the Beis HaMikdash was opened every morning. Notlos HaMafteach, he would take the key, the Kohen would take the key. There's a discussion if the Kohen did the actual opening, or just taking the key, if a Levi was the one that opened it. Notla Mefteach Ufasach as a Pishpish, he opened up the door. V'nichas L'ta, according to the Tanakhama, there was a cell from which he entered. U'mi'ta, from that special cell, from that Ta, which we'll discuss in tomorrow's year, the Talmud, they would go into the Heichel. Rav Yehuda Omer, Rav Yehuda disagrees, he says, B'toich Ovi Shal Kaislai Ma'alech, the wall was hollow, and he would walk along the wall, and that's how we come in between the two doors, and he would open, he would be standing in the area between the two sets of doors, the door of the Ulam and the door of the Heichel. So he would open his Pasach HaChitzonis Mivifnim, the door on the Ulam side, he was standing from the inside, and that's how he opened up that lock. Vesapnimis, in the door, the inner door, he was standing on the outside of the door, and that's how he'd open up the Bechutz and open up to that door.